Welcome to No More Desire. My name's Jake Castleman. I've had personal experience with what it takes to get clean and stay clean of porn. And now I'm helping others just like you break free and step into their new life. Through one-on-one coaching, hands-on practical exercises, and life-changing material, I help others break free of porn and never look back. To discover how you can overcome porn addiction, go to nomoredesire.com. Hey, my friend, and welcome to the show. This is No More Desire. My name is Jake Castleman. Today is episode 47, Overcome Addiction Using Nutrition, featuring Jordan Gunderson, master herbalist with Health Saves. I'm doing things a little bit differently today. We have a guest on the show, which is exciting. Jordan has been a friend of mine a long time, and he is extremely knowledgeable in the world of nutrition and health. And we're going to talk about all about how our nutrition, including what we eat, as well as some herbs that we can use to improve our health, improve our mental health in particular, and the way that our brain functions so that we can make ourselves less susceptible to addiction and more integrated into recovery. The biggest reason that I'm doing this with you today is really because of my own personal experience, how nutrition and natural remedies have improved my mental health and helped me in overcoming porn addiction and other addictions. My nutrition has taken a central role, and that's why it's also a part of my program that I do with my clients. It's helped my clients. I've taught them ways of improving their nutrition that have helped them substantially in lowering their addiction cravings and increasing their ability to stay sober. So today with Jordan Gunderson, who's again a good friend of mine, we're going to be talking about how nutrition can impact our mental health. Jordan is a world-famous master herbalist and iridologist. He has been featured around the world in various podcasts, news shows, documentaries, health publications, and more. He is best known as the creator of the world-famous herbal formula known as HMCTN, which has helped thousands around the world get through COVID and aid in recovery from long-haul COVID. He has also pioneered the first family iridologist program to empower families to take a proactive approach to health by learning the fundamentals of iridology in the comfort of their own home. Jordan runs Health Saves, an organization dedicated to helping individuals make healthier choices through faith, herbs, and food. When he is not working, Jordan loves to spend time with his wife, Cassidy, and his kids outdoors or playing games. You can find Jordan at healthsaves.org. And I want to put in a little plug here as well that Jordan and his family are plant-based. They do eat vegan. However, if you're not vegan, it really doesn't matter. Today's episode is filled with value. I'm excited for what you're going to learn. I think that it was a brilliant episode. We have a great discussion with just so many different facets of how nutrition impacts mental health and overall health. So I know it's going to do a lot of good for you. Keep an open mind and experience what Jordan, someone who's been doing this for many years, has to say about how our nutrition impacts our mental health and can improve our sobriety. Jordan, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, Jake. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's a privilege to have you on here, man. Jordan and I have been friends for several years now, and he's always just been such an impressive guy and really knows his stuff when it comes to nutrition and herbal medicine, et cetera, and just very, very, very excited by Jordan and excited for today's show. So tell me, Jordan, just to kind of kick things off, what's something in your life right now when it comes to nutrition or herbs that's got you excited? I feel like you always have some new thing you're trying or researching or excited about. So what's the latest?
The latest. Well, there's quite a few things actually. I think you hit the nail on the head. We're always trying to learn. So first off, is actually iodine. I think you and I talked a little bit about this offline, but iodine is super important for a lot of different functions in the body, as you probably already know, but it's also very important for thyroid health. And your thyroid uses a large amount of iodine to help regulate it. And if you don't know anything about the thyroid, it's responsible in part for things like your mood, your emotional regulation, your metabolism, so your weight, your energy balance, things like that. And what's really interesting about iodine is that iodine supplements can actually be quite toxic if taken in too large amounts. And so with most iodine supplements, they say, you know, take a really small amount. And a while ago, maybe a couple years ago, my wife and I were looking for a good iodine supplement. So we did lots of research. We looked for the highest quality and we started using it. And it was just like, man, this is okay. And then we started using Atlantic dulse, which is a type of seaweed. And we started to feel so much better. Things that I didn't think were problems started to go away. And so in doing some more research, I found that, this is more just recently, 1 teaspoon of dulse flakes contains about 150 milligrams of iodine. The recommendation is 150 micrograms, which is much smaller. So that's what you should be getting in your daily diet. You know, most people say, oh, I'm just going to get my iodine from iodized salt, right? A 1/4 teaspoon of iodized salt contains about 78 micrograms. So you got to do about a 1/2 teaspoon to get your recommendation. But you just take 1 teaspoon of dulse flakes, you're getting way more than enough. And what your body doesn't use, it's just going to secrete out. And that's the benefit with using a whole plant food rather than a supplement, is whatever you don't need, your body's just going to get rid of it really easily. And that doesn't always happen with supplements. I think it all goes together. I think when we try to isolate and separate, that's when we're going to be kind of going around from thing to thing, trying to find the thing that works, when it's actually not just one thing, it's many different things.
I love that, Jordan. And I've, you know, spent a fair amount of time in my day just studying some work from people like Zach Bush, MD, and other people that speak from a very holistic perspective like you do. And it is all integrated. I mean, we, through partially from people like Descartes, right, we separated the mind and the body, right? We say we have mind, we have the body. There is, you know, these are two different things. And there's merit in that to a degree. But unfortunately, it has taught us what I eat and how I exercise doesn't have to do with how I think or my mental health, and vice versa, right? How I think, my mental health, et cetera, doesn't have to do with how my body's doing. And they're actually integrated, like you're saying. And I'm sure you know far more about that than I do.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. There is merit in what we've done to reduce things down to this nutrient and this chemical in the body. But at the same time, when we focus too much on those, we lose the big picture.
I want to kind of focus in on your story and Cassidy's story too, right? Cassidy, for those who don't know, Jordan is Jordan's wife, and she is a PhD in nutrition, brilliant nutritionist, has worked with many, many clients and done excellent work helping people heal. So I'd love to hear, or I'd love for you to tell people, I'm familiar with your story, but talk to people about kind of the beginnings of when you and Cassidy got married and where you guys were at and what generally led you on this journey to where you are now.
My story really tracks along with hers. I don't think I'd be where I am today without her kind of pulling me along. But when we first got married, she had a lot of health problems, and we actually thought it was just one thing. We thought it was Crohn's disease. She had been diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and you know, the thought was, oh, it's, you know, we can manage that, we can deal with that. And then when we went to the doctor for our first time, being as a newly married couple, just to get things checked and see where our health was. We didn't have that good of results. We didn't have what we were hoping to hear. She was also diagnosed with prediabetes. Her A1C levels were higher than my father's, who was a type 1 diabetic. So I don't know why she was diagnosed as prediabetes. I think it should have been, you know, full-on type 2 diabetes or type 1. She was also diagnosed with arthritis, lupus, hypothyroidism, PCOS, and then with a side of depression. The doctor didn't diagnose that, but it was pretty apparent.
Just in addition to everything else, let's just throw a little depression on there on top.
Right. But again, this all goes together. It's not just one thing. These aren't just individual diseases that are coming about. It's all just one thing. And so with that, the doctor was kind of like, well, you know, we can do some things, you know, cleaning up your diet will help, but realistically, what's going to happen is, you know, you can get a few more years with medications, but ultimately you may not live very long.
So you're looking at, you're looking at this terminal kind of situation. And you guys have been married how long at this point?
We had been married for about 6 months.
6 months. And so as a young married couple, start of your lives, you know, you're expecting another 60 years or so at this point, at least, to live out your lives and have happiness, have children, do all sorts of amazing things, have adventures. And now you've heard my wife is likely going to pass in the next few years. What was that like for you at that point?
I remember that so vividly. I remember sitting there in the doctor's office and just thinking, oh my gosh. And it was almost like time slowed down in that moment, and I could see a bunch of different options. I could see a bunch of different things before me. And I grew up in a kind of alternatively oriented home as far as medical stuff goes. And so I wasn't really willing to accept that anyway. So I remember sitting there thinking, what I do next or how I react next will define what happens. And I knew in that moment Cassidy was looking at me, you know, just saying, what do we do? What am I going to do? And I looked at her and I was like, we're going to figure this out. We're going to find a way. I don't know what it is, but we're going to figure this out. We're going to get you better. And it was that moment that ignited a fire in her to go and do lots of research to try and figure this out. And so she went back to school after completing her undergraduate degree in political science to go and get a master's and a PhD in health and nutrition. And doing all of this research, all of the schooling, she found that a whole food, plant-based diet promised to reverse a lot of these conditions that she was dealing with. And so she approached me and she said, hey, would you ever give up eating meat? And I said, no. Never in a million years. That is a direct quote. That is exactly what I said.
And knowing you now, Jordan, I it's just so funny to hear you say that, because I'm like, look at where you are now and how you guys live your lives and how you eat. It's just so funny that that's where you started. Like, absolutely not. I will not make that change.
Yep. And then as, you know, time went along, we found that the LDS word of wisdom, the health code of Latter-day Saints, actually advocated for something very similar, that meat should only be eaten in sparing ways, specifically in times of winter, cold, or famine. That's what the text says. And that kind of convicted me a little bit. And I said, okay, I'll try it out for 2 weeks. My wife was like, hey, what if we just did a 2-week trial? Would you do that? Would you help support me in that? And I said, all right, I'll do that. But I'm still going to eat whatever I want when I'm at work and things like that. But then just in those 2 weeks, I felt better than I ever had in my life. And that's not an exaggeration. That's the reason I still adhere to this kind of diet.
So there's actually some science to help back this up. There was a recent study that found that omnivores who avoided meat products for just 2 weeks had improvements in measurements of their mood and stress levels. And I think part of this is because a majority of the beneficial bacteria that live in our gut, they feed on carbohydrates, particularly fiber and resistant starch, which you get exclusively from plant foods. And these types of bacteria produce short-chain fatty acids like butyrate, which has been shown to do things like seal up leaky gut, which plays a huge role in any kind of mood or brain issues. It helps to fight inflammation. It can improve insulin sensitivity. It can accelerate weight loss and protect against things like cancer. Now, what's really unfortunate that we have here in America is that, depending on who you ask, about 95 to 97% of Americans don't get enough fiber in their diet. That's a lot of people.
Yeah, that is it's absolutely pervasive. Yeah. How many grams do we need versus how many are we getting?
I don't remember exactly how much. I think it's like 25 to 30 grams of dietary fiber per day.
That's
about
minimum,
the recommendation.
Right.
Yeah, that's the minimum.
Yeah.
But even then, that's probably not even enough to be considered healthy. And this is kind of one of the issues I have with the medical system, is that there's not enough focus on elimination as a determinant of your health. I think a long time ago there was, many decades ago, 50 to 100 years ago, it was common knowledge that you eat food, you have to eliminate. My wife, she went to the bathroom once a month.
Yeah, that's, when you tell me that story, I tell other people about that and they're like, that's not true. There's no way that's true. They're like, that's made up.
Right.
Yeah. And so what she was experiencing, I mean, physically, right, she was in dire circumstances, and then mentally and emotionally, she was also suffering immensely, I'm sure, at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that was the underlying cause of all of her problems, not getting those toxins out of the digestive tract. When you retain a lot of those toxins and a lot of those foods and things that are not foods that you're eating, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but when you retain those things,
that's a can of worms there. That's right. That's a big can of worms there. Yeah.
You are, number one, that stuff starts to ferment and cause all kinds of problems. Number two, you're robbing your cells of food, of the nutrition, of those nutrients. When your food is devoid of nutrients, your cells in your body are not getting the stuff that they need to function properly. And so that's what leads to a cause of all kinds of diseases, is just from not eliminating and not eating the right kinds of foods, obviously.
Well, and this is something I've spoken about in a previous podcast episode, just the fact that micronutrients, vitamins, minerals, phytonutrients, etc., we need these as building blocks for our brain every day, not just like at the beginning of life, but on a daily basis. I remember years ago really diving into this, of nutrition's impact on mental health, and I was finding in my own personal life that based on how my nutrition was, that's how I how susceptible I was towards addiction versus how easy it was for me to stay clean. And I was looking up all these different nutrients of, you know, you name it, whatever vitamin or mineral, and I saw it had a function in the brain. And I was like, why have I never been taught this? You know, I've always been taught that calcium and vitamin C, vitamin A, you know, et cetera, all these things just play a role in my body. Oh, I need them to feel healthy. But I've never been told that all of these play such a crucial role in the function of my brain. So it would make sense if I eat better and I eat more whole foods, I would feel better, less stress, less anxiety, less depression, right? And I'll be more capable of staying clean, easier, staying clean of my addiction, right? Does that make sense to you? And is that what you've seen?
Absolutely. There was one thing I was going to mention that goes along with that is that, you know, we talk about calories a lot in our society that, you know, if you want to lose weight, you want to feel better, you got to count calories. That's absolutely not true because calories are not created equal. There's different kinds of calories. And a lot of that goes to the density of the particular food. And what that does, when you eat a higher volume of nutrient-dense, lower-calorie foods, you're going to... So what happens is your stomach has these little receptors near the top of the stomach. And once your stomach fills up to that point, it actually sends a hormone response to your brain saying, I'm done eating, I can't eat anymore. And that's when you should quit eating. But the problem is today, when we eat these really calorie-dense foods with not a lot of nutritional value, and they're very low volume, that doesn't fill up our stomach. And so we maybe fill up half of our stomach when we eat like a burger and fries, and it's got lots of fat, it's got lots of oil, it's got all these additives and preservatives that have lots of calories, but no nutrition. So we fill up half of our stomach, but those receptors haven't been triggered yet to tell our brain that we're done eating. And so we still feel hungry and we go, oh, I need more. And we eat more and more and more. The same thing goes for processed and packaged foods, right? They are so devoid of nutrients, but there's a lot of calories in there. So it doesn't make sense to just count calories saying that, you know, the calories in a banana are equal to the calories in a tablespoon of oil. That's absolutely not true. If we got the same volume of food in oil that makes up a banana, we would be done for the day. Like, that's a lot of calories.
Yeah. And I love what you're saying because it makes me think back on my life and what I've personally experienced. You know, I fortunately grew up in a family where I was taught about health. When I was younger, my family wasn't really into that, like when I was a kid. But when I entered into my teenage years, my mother and father were really learning a lot about health. And so fortunately, we were eating more and more whole foods and better and better. And by the time I was in my early 20s, you know, I realized... One thing, I really don't like this feeling of not feeling in control of my choices and my habits and things. And I don't like feeling dependent on something. And so I experienced cravings for food all the time. Like, I was thinking about it, wanting it, right? And I saw that when I ate a really whole, you know, well-rounded, nutrient-dense meal, like you're talking about, lots of veggies and fruit and, you know, some good nuts or seeds or things like that, then I would feel full, right? I'd eat all that and I'd feel full, I'd feel good, and I'd be like, I don't really actually need any more food. But if I'd go to a fast food restaurant or I'd eat, you know, junk, it didn't matter. I could eat, you know, 8 cookies and still feel hungry. And I understood kind of through intuition and experience, and then also through some things I was learning, you know, through stuff I was reading, et cetera, and what people had taught me, that if I ate food that contained vitamins, minerals, proteins, fats, carbs, right, in good amounts, I wouldn't have to experience so many cravings because my body actually got what it needed. And then along with that, I experienced this mental well-being. Not to say that my life's perfect, right? But not to say that my mood is perfect, right? I still experience challenges, right? We all experience challenges, but it's become significantly better by eating better. And that's central to my recovery. And so I really wanted to just kind of clarify for the audience, Jordan, because you touched on something earlier about the microbiome. And I loved how you were talking about eating fiber, right, is actually feeding this good bacteria in our gut. And I wondered if you might be able to tell people a little bit more about what those little microorganisms are responsible for when it comes to mood and overall health, if you want to dive into that.
Like we talked about before, one of the big things that certain types of bacteria will do is they will create short chain fatty acids, which in turn influence your gut. And about 95% of the serotonin, which is a hormone that helps to stabilize mood, helps to give you happiness. It's considered to be a happiness hormone. That's produced by beneficial bacteria in the gut. There's also harmful bacteria that reside there. Unless you take things like garlic, which can clear those kinds of things out. One of the interesting things about garlic is it's not only antibacterial. You know, garlic is one of the most antibacterial substances on the planet that's natural, but it's also incredibly prebiotic. So it also influences the development of your gut flora.
And for people who don't know the term prebiotic, right, that actually feeds the probiotic bacteria in your body. In other words, the helpful bacteria in your body. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So it will help to produce cultures of new bacteria is what prebiotic means.
Yeah. And again, in my studies of the microbiome, just to kind of harp a little bit on something you were talking about there with harmful versus helpful bacteria. Zach Bush was the one who really influenced me to understand it's not so black and white as good and bad, right? It's more so the balance of the environment within our guts, right? If I have an imbalanced level of, let's say, E. coli, there's many different types of E. coli, but an imbalanced level, then it can start to dominate in my gut and cause issues. I'm sure you could speak much more educated on that, but it's not, you know, if there's helpful bacteria, it's because it's in good balance in my body, right? I'm eating a large variety of plant foods to feed all these different, you know, billions of different types of bacteria that I really need in my gut in order to carry out all sorts of different responsibilities that they do. And that's where my health is founded. Would you say that's accurate, or what do you have to say about that?
I think that kind of hits back on the point that we were talking about earlier with the reductionist view and focusing too much on one thing, you lose sight of the bigger picture. For example, there is cyanide in apples.
Right.
So should we not eat apples anymore? Because, you know, cyanide is harmful. But when it's put with all those other things, it actually does a lot of good. So, and here's a good example with apples specifically. There was a study done a few years ago on, they were looking at the vitamin C content in an apple, and it's about 750 milligrams of vitamin C in the apple. But what they found was that the effect of eating an apple actually has the same effect of taking, it essentially doubles the amount of vitamin C. So from one apple, you get the effect of 1,500 milligrams of vitamin C versus the actual 750 that are in that apple. And so it's the synergy of all the compounds in that apple that really enhance the overall efficacy of that vitamin C. And so that's why, you know, I'm a big believer in eating whole plant foods. I think a lot of people may often, you know, I talk to people and they misconstrue my beliefs and say, oh, you're vegan or you're vegetarian. I often work with people who are vegan or vegetarian who are very unhealthy, because Oreos are vegan and vegetarian. Those are not healthy. Those are devoid of nutrients. And so my whole thing is, let's get whole plant foods. Let's get back to the earth and eat these things in their natural state as close as we can as possible. And our overall nutrition is going to improve immensely.
I love that. And it's really amazing what is just here on the earth that can help us immensely with both the health of our body and our brains, our overall health, right? The ecosystem that's within our body. And so Jordan, I'm gonna ask a question that's maybe a bit to the side of, what if someone doesn't want to go off of all meat products, right? All animal products, I should say. What would you recommend for that person? They're like, I'm still going to eat meat, but what are a couple of changes or things that I can do in order to improve my overall well-being?
If that's what you want to do, is you want to make sure you're getting the cleanest meats or animal products possible. One of the big issues with animal products is the hormones that they inject into them. That's what you're going to be taking in as well. There are other chemicals that settle in animal tissues known as dioxins, and those are extremely harmful to human health. And so my suggestion is to make sure you're getting, you know, where your food is coming from. You know, stopping by McDonald's, that's not going to cut it if you want to improve your mental health. So make sure you know where you're getting your food. If you're eating animal products, I would also say to reduce a little bit, just simply reducing, not having meat with every meal. You know, I know there's a huge thing right now with people who are saying, oh, you know, people are trying to make us stop eating meat. They just want us to all go vegan. I don't get into that. I'm not on that side of things. But I think just simply reducing how much meat you're eating is going to play a huge role in your health, and increasing your fruit and vegetable intake. One of the big things I do want to mention with this is high blood sugar, which actually fat, animal fat in particular, plays a huge role in insulin sensitivities. What a lot of people don't realize is that high blood sugar has a huge impact on cognitive function. That there's actually an increasing body of evidence that indicates that Alzheimer's is actually diabetes type 3. So it's this idea that Alzheimer's is actually insulin resistance in the brain. And what most people don't understand is why the body is insulin resistant. You know, we go to the doctor and they just say, oh, it looks like you're insulin resistant, without any causal theory as to why it's happening. It's not something that just happens. You know, diabetes is classified as a lifestyle disorder and a dietary disorder. So your body primarily runs on sugar from carbohydrates. Now, fat and protein, those also can be sources of fuel, but they take much longer to digest and convert into sugar that the body can use. So there's two approaches to managing insulin resistance with diet. And the primary approach that people take these days is to say, well, I'm just going to cut out all carbohydrates. I'm going to, you know, just go on this keto diet, this carnivore diet, and that's going to fix my problem. And yes, that will manage your blood sugar levels, but you also mortgage your health, because your body has to work harder to convert that fat and that protein into sugar that your body can use for energy. And so what you'll often find is that people will have lots of brain fog on these kinds of diets. I've worked with many people on the keto diet or the carnivore diet, and they take these supplements to help them not have brain fog. And so that's a big issue. But then there's the other approach, is where you go high carb and low fat. Now, the reason why this works, and I think it's better, well, there's a couple of reasons. Number one, what happens in your arteries is that there's, when there's too much fat, that fat will actually physically block areas that are known as glucose receptor sites, where your glucose will go through and insulin, the hormone produced by your pancreas, that insulin will help facilitate that exchange for that glucose to go through those sites, and it goes through that site to each cell to help give them energy to perform their necessary functions. Now, when you have too much fat and it covers up those sites, that glucose doesn't have anywhere to go. And so your body recognizes that the blood sugar is too high, we need more insulin. So your pancreas starts pumping out more insulin to try and get the blood sugar to go down, but there's physically nowhere it can go. So your blood sugar stays high, and they say, oh, look, you're insulin resistant. But if you simply reduce the amount of fat that you're eating and also not combine fat and sugar, then you won't have that same problem. And how that ties into your brain health, your overall mental health, is your brain takes up about 50% of the sugar that you eat, according to Harvard Medical School. And so if your brain is taking up that much energy from your body, in my view, it might be best to get that sugar as quickly and as easily as possible, rather than having to wait to convert fat and protein into sugar. It's best to just get it straight from the carbohydrates, where it can be broken down really efficiently and really quickly, so that you can be on your game as much as possible.
And can you tell people some healthy go-tos when it comes to those carbs, getting those quick carbs?
Nature's fast food are fruits, because they're super easy to digest. That sugar gets into your system really quickly, and there are more calories. So things like bananas, apples, oranges, dates, mangoes, things like that. But for more long-term sustainability, as far as getting more calories and having a slower release of glucose, things like brown rice, quinoa, potatoes, sweet potatoes, beans are really great. I try to avoid gluten products, so like wheat. I try to get gluten-free whole grains, which I think are great. But as far as wheat goes here in America, there's a problem. There's a big problem. I have a lot of clients who go over to Europe and eat wheat. They have no problems. But when they eat it here, they have all kinds of horrible issues.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've studied some about that, but why don't you tell people about that? Because obviously there's a huge movement right now with being gluten-free, right? It can sometimes seem like a fad, or for some people it seems a little silly, but there is real scientific things going on with our food, how we're treating it, it's significant, both for our mental and physical health. So talk about that difference between us and maybe, you know, Europe, as far as wheat goes.
One of the big things with Europe is they don't allow glyphosate in the same way that we do.
And there are many people who do not know what glyphosate is. So could you tell people what it is?
Mm-hmm. Chemical pesticide. It's a chemical that's used in pesticides that prevents bugs, they say. There's many other better ways to do it that are more natural. But in Europe, they don't allow the same kind of glyphosate treatment that they do here in America. And here in America, it's so prevalent that even if you have a farmer who sprays glyphosate on his wheat in one field, and then a mile down the road, a few miles down the road even, you have a farmer who doesn't use glyphosate. Glyphosate travels in the air, it travels in underground, in the underground waterways, that field that is not being actively treated by glyphosate will have glyphosate contamination. It's a really big problem, and it causes a lot of gut problems as well.
And glyphosate, Roundup is another term for it, for those who don't know. So we've used it for a long, long time, several decades now, and it's become far more pervasive. We use it in larger amounts. And so a little bit of glyphosate here or there, right, really wouldn't be an issue. But because we use it on so many of our foods, then we're getting quite an influx of this chemical, and it is impacting our health in multiple ways. So talk more about, Jordan, as far as, obviously glyphosate is sprayed on so many different crops, GMO crops, specifically genetically modified crops, but talk about why it's a particular issue with wheat and gluten maybe specifically.
Yeah, I believe it goes to the retention of the glyphosate by certain proteins in the wheat, particularly that gluten. It has a particular affinity for that. And so when you're ingesting that, it's causing much more of a problem than other foods that are sprayed with glyphosate. I will say, though, that that's still a problem when you're eating foods that have been sprayed with Roundup, because it just kind of adds to a congested liver, so to speak. Whenever you have any kind of chemicals that come into your body, they go to the liver to be processed. And so a big part of some of these glyphosate problems is actually a liver problem as well. And if you know anything about the liver and the emotional connection, your liver can even play a big role in your overall brain health, your mood stabilization. Even a lot of depression can link back to the liver. I kind of got off on a tangent in the liver here, but
No, I think it's fascinating. I apologize for cutting you off, but I think that this is actually very important. The liver, again, Jordan has mentioned this, but for those of you who don't know, right, it's the major detoxifier of the body. We have a couple of those. I think the kidneys do that too, but the liver is our biggest proponent of that. It takes care of pulling toxins out of the body, which toxins are involved in both physical and mental illness and chronic diseases. If we have a body that's clearing out well and our liver's functioning well, then we'll feel healthy. We'll have great energy levels, good mood, right? At least it will improve those things. If the liver's not functioning well, it's overloaded, which is easy to happen now with the food we eat and all the chemicals in our foods, in our environment, our air, our water, then our body starts to become overwhelmed, right? And then it's just trying to, I'm sure you could speak much more to this, Jordan, but it's trying to cope, and it's doing the best it can, right, to clear out or to heal. But there's a lot of different things that fall by the wayside, or things that happen with our mood, et cetera, that the body just simply can't manage because it's overwhelmed. Maybe you can speak more to that, or you can talk more about kind of what's happening to the liver and why it plays such a big role in mental health, whichever of those directions you'd like to go.
Yeah, I'm going to back it up a little bit here and get a little more philosophical. And
bring on the philosophy,
bring it back to the Bible, actually. Not going
right.
to get religious, but I'm going to get philosophical. In the Old Testament, it says, I believe it's in the book of Leviticus or Deuteronomy, it says that the life of every creature is in the blood. So our life force, if you will, is in our blood. Now, it's really interesting that our Creator included four main organs to help filter our blood. The liver is the biggest. Then we have two kidneys and a spleen, and they all help to filter out toxins from our blood. Now, your liver is kind of the main driver of that. And the best way to think of it is like on Finding Nemo, when Nemo gets into the fish tank in the dentist's office and they're trying to escape, and they go and they clog up the filter.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens to the tank is it gets super yucky and grimy and gross. That's essentially what can happen in our bodies, so to speak, when those main detoxifiers are clogged up.
It's a good image. I like the image.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. But that's also what happens to our minds when we've got all this toxicity inside our body. So if our liver becomes congested, our kidneys become, well, what will usually happen is that our liver will try to get rid of toxins. And if it can't do that, well, let me back up a step further. It will get rid of toxins by secreting bile into the gallbladder. And then the gallbladder stores it for a while and then releases it into the small intestine. And then once it's in the small intestine, it gets mixed with our food that we've eaten. Our food gets absorbed, and then it goes into our colon, and then we eliminate it. If our liver can't process those toxins, what it will often do is it will store those toxins for us. It will wrap those toxins in some fat and then store it. It will essentially bite the bullet for us.
And it does that to protect the mm-hmm. rest of the body when we're overwhelmed. It just doesn't, right. It can't get rid of the toxins as fast as they're coming in.
And that's how people can get non-alcoholic fatty liver. It's actually a pretty prevalent thing nowadays, whereas before that used to not really be a thing. But we have so many toxins all around us that our liver just is overwhelmed. And so that's a huge part of our mood. And one of the emotions with the liver is anger. That's one of the primary emotions. Old healers long ago, they used to believe that depression was also associated with the liver.
Yeah, and it's interesting you touch on the depression and things. I'm actually one who I've struggled with seasonal affective disorder for many years. And then I got on a 5-HTP supplement, which is, for those of you who don't know, it's just essentially like a natural form of serotonin. So it's not an SSRI, but it's a form of serotonin, and I get it through Thorn, and it has a couple of other micronutrients to help the body absorb and use serotonin. It depends on the person. For me, that's made an immense difference. I shouldn't say immense. It's really taken the edge off for me and been really positive. Jordan is very holistic and into, you know, healing through food and herbs and things. So I don't know what you would think of the 5-HTP supplement, but it's helped me a lot. Which I was really considering going on an SSRI because the seasonal depression was, it was just grating, right? It'd been going on for years. Is every single year around winter time, I'd go through that. And so that 5-HTP helped a lot. But I don't know if you've seen people have success with that, or what you do for your clients when it comes to these kinds of mood disorders.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm glad that you found something that's working. That's one of the tricks, is trying to find something that works. And that's been a lot of what we've gone through with what we do, is trial and error. And I think that's what a lot of people do. And I probably should have mentioned this at the beginning, but we actually came upon some interesting stuff with vitamin D. Cassidy, my wife, is one who kind of struggles with that as well. During the winter time here in Utah, it gets pretty dark and there's not a lot of sun. And so one thing that we have done is we just go on vacation during like January or February to try and combat that, because, you know, the sun does a lot for that. But what's really interesting with seasonal affective, one of the biggest things that can help is actually vitamin D. A lot of people believe that it comes from lack of sunlight and lack of vitamin D. Now, with vitamin D is actually a hormone that your body creates on its own. And so supplementing with it isn't always the best. You'll get some benefits from it, but you got to take high amounts of vitamin D to really get the benefit. And so what we found, we actually found it's a UVB light that mimics the rays from the sun. And we got one of those and started using it. We just use it for a couple minutes each day, and it actually changed her mood significantly. Like, there was a noticeable difference just doing that.
That's powerful.
Than supplementing orally, I should say.
And it's such a simple solution,
mm-hmm.
right?
And also, I wanted to mention that with vitamin D, one of the problems that a lot of people run into is that the liver stores your vitamin D. So ideally, you're building up stores by being out in the sun. You're building up stores of vitamin D by being out in the sun during the summer. And then when it comes time for winter, you can go through the winter just on your stores of vitamin D in your liver. However, most people have a congested or constipated, so to speak, liver, and it can't store that vitamin D very well. And so if you focus on the liver, help your liver clear it out, then you should be able to store vitamin D a lot better. And having worked with many different people, I can say that's a big part of it. I was just meeting with a client yesterday, and liver issues were one of her big things. And so she's been doing things to help detoxify her liver, and she's starting to feel a lot better. So she'll go out in the sun when it's super sunny and just sit out for 30 minutes to an hour. And a lot of her problems are starting to go away that are, you wouldn't think that vitamin D played a role in. But it plays a huge role in most of your bodily functions.
It's phenomenal. And there's, for each person, right? We all have different ways that our body might be out of balance, or things that we're lacking or in need of, or what we're getting too much of. And so for particular clients, that can really be a great key. I love that. Well, I don't know if there was anything else you wanted to touch on today for people who, maybe struggle with mental health issues or with addiction, and they're really trying to improve their situation there through their health or through nutrition. What do you have left to say to the people, Jordan?
I have a few things, actually. I'm mostly an herbalist. I have a lot of crossover with nutrition, because I believe you can't just use herbs without the diet component. And I don't think you can just use diet to overcome your health problems without herbs. And so I'm in both arenas here. But I do want to mention a few herbs that I have used and that I have studied that really help with mental function, with cognitive function. So these are a few of my favorites that I'll just go through really quickly and talk a little bit about them. The first one is called Siberian ginseng, or Eleuthero. This is an adaptogenic herb. And so one of the main things that it does is it helps adrenal gland function and cortisol regulation. One of the biggest problems I see today is chronic stress. And that puts a huge strain on your cognitive function. And high cortisol is associated with things like anxiety, depression, feeling stressed out all the time, worry, you know, things like that. And so this Siberian ginseng, or Eleuthero, it's spelled Eleuthero for people who want to look it up. It helps to slow down that spike in cortisol. So if you're struggling with things like not being able to go to sleep at night, waking up in the night, feeling really groggy in the morning, it's usually a sign that your cortisol may be too high. And this Siberian ginseng helps to lower those levels, but it also helps to improve memory. So if you're struggling with remembering things, LEU Throw is great to help with that. And my preferred method of getting herbs in is with a tea or in a tincture. You got to make sure that you find really good quality herbs, though, because my wife and I were just looking at a study that was recently done where they found, I think it was about 40 to 50% of supplements on Amazon. They just took a random sampling of supplements on Amazon, and they found that those supplements either didn't have the herb in them that they claimed to have, or it had a bunch of other things that were not on the label. So you got to be careful about what brands you trust.
Goodness sakes, yes. Well, what brands do you trust, Jordan?
So, for example, my mom was actually using a Chaste Berry supplement. Chaste Berry is good for women's hormones and things like that. And I looked at one of the capsules. It was a powdered herb, and it was brown. And I went, wait a minute, this herb is like a dark purple color. This should be dark purple. And I looked on the label, and it said one of the ingredients was brown rice hull. And so they had used brown rice hull as a filler, and who knows how much Chaste Berry was actually in it. And so I said, Mom, this is crap. I'll give you something. So there's a few really good brands that I like. You always want to make sure you get organic or wildcrafted. Wildcrafted means they just went out into nature and harvested some of these. Wildcrafted or wild harvested, that means they got it just in nature. And some of the best brands are Star West Botanicals, Mountain Rose Herbs, herbco.com, and there's another one called Best Botanicals. You can find Best Botanicals and Star West Botanicals on Amazon.
Tell people, Jordan, why it's important to find wildcrafted or organic and how that kind of compares to just run-of-the-mill. Like if someone was to just grow it, you know, in like a under a light in their basement versus finding it out in nature. That's probably a giant question based on what I understand about that. Yeah. But maybe generally, why is that important?
Well, if it's in the wild, you're going to get a lot better nutrient and phytochemical profile. There's going to be a lot more of what's supposed to be in those plants than somebody who's just growing it from a light in their home or something. Also you want to avoid chemical pesticides. That's one of the big ones too.
People are using chemical pesticides on herbs too, huh?
Yeah, and a lot of times some places will radiate their herbs, which destroys a lot of the medicinal compounds.
Goodness, why would they do that?
As a form of bacteria control, because this is another big can of worms. The FDA regulates various microorganisms that can be found in a certain plant, and if you're above that threshold, you can't sell it, so you have to radiate the plant to get those, you know, bugs, bacteria to die or whatever. But it's what's really interesting is there's a plant called mullein, which is just like a magnet for bacteria and bugs and whatnot. But mullein is also really antibacterial.
So nature balances that out.
Exactly. So I mean, the FDA, they're all reductionist thinkers, and you know, it's really hard to get over that. But if you can grow your own herbs, that's even better. And here's one you can grow, which is rosemary. Believe it or not, the rosemary you've got in your kitchen spices has been extensively studied for cognitive improvement. There are multiple studies showing that it can stimulate brain function, improve memory recall, also improve mood and concentration. It does a number of other different things, but two of the main things that it does for the brain are memory recall and improved concentration.
Love that. Yeah, it's amazing what's provided in nature for our well-being and can help us out.
Yeah. Another great, it's
not very popular, but I have done a lot of research on it and I've used it with certain people. It's called wood betony, and wood betony is more of an ancient herb. It was used widely by the Greeks and the Romans. It was kind of regarded as a cure-all, but then it kind of fell out of vogue and people didn't really use it a ton. But it's really great in cases of trauma. And, you know, a lot of times when we're going through addictions or we're struggling with things like that, it's usually because of prior trauma or some kind of an emotional disturbance.
And it's always playing some kind of a role.
Yeah. And wood betony is a really great herb to help you be in your body instead of that dissociated emotional state. So for example, there's a prominent herbalist who has a book where he talks about this herb. His name is Matthew Wood, and he relates several experiences that he had with this herb using this with clients. Some of them had claimed to have been abducted by aliens, and they were in a very dissociated from reality state. This person was feeling really detached from reality, and this herbalist, Matthew Wood, gave him some wood betony, and it actually brought him to a place where he talked about some trauma that he had a long time ago, and he used that, saying that he was abducted by aliens, as a way to cope and deal with that trauma.
Wow.
And so that wood betony kind of helped bring things together so that you could be in your body, feel those emotions, and move through it.
Well, I love that. It's that's great that it's a powerful herb for that. One of the fundamental teachings in my program that I teach my clients is to essentially on the addiction side, we live in a state of resistance at the inner core of addiction, and that's to resist challenges and difficulties, resist hard emotions, resist help from others and help from God. And then on the recovery end, it's acceptance and surrender, which can be very paradoxical, but it's really to accept hard things, challenges, difficult emotions, and move through them, like you're saying, and then also at the same time to accept help from God, help from those around us. And so very cool that an herb can kind of help us with that mindset and building those habits. Well, that's great. Was there another, you have a list. Like I said, Jordan knows his stuff. I didn't know if there was something else you wanted to add in.
Yeah, there's one more I'll mention. There's some honorable mentions. I'll say ginkgo and St. John's wort are also great. Mm-hmm. St. John's wort is...
That's ginkgo biloba, is that,
yeah,
is that
exactly.
Correct?
Mm-hmm. Those are two of my honorable mentions. But the other one I wanted to mention was gotu kola, G-O-T-U-K-O-L-A. That's a really interesting one, because it actually can help stimulate growth of new brain cells.
Amazing.
Yeah. It also helps to protect the brain from damage, can help alleviate stress and whatnot. And it also helps improve memory and mood. And so that's another one of my favorites for brain issues. And so, yeah, I'd look more into those if you're curious.
I love it. Well, Jordan, thank you so much for coming on the show today, man. It's always a pleasure learning from you and, you know, just really picking your brain on all the things that you know about nutrition and herbs and these natural, amazing ways of healing our bodies and our brains to really help us experience a life of well-being and peace. And I appreciate that so much. And if you guys want to learn more about Jordan or his wife Cassidy, and to either meet with them or learn more about what they do, you can go to healthsaves.org, and they have phenomenal resources there, multiple books they've published, and many different ways that you can become educated and help empower your life with better health. Is there anything else you want, anywhere else you want to point people to, Jordan?
No, I think you covered it pretty well. Thanks for having me on. This was a pleasure and fun to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on, man. And again, just good to be friends with you and to be able to have your wisdom. So appreciate you joining the show today, man. Everything expressed on the No More Desire podcast are the opinions of the host and participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of a qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.